Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Brandon Krakowski, a lecturer at the School of Engineering and the Director of Data Science and Research at the Wharton AI and Analytics Initiative, where he oversees the development of innovative analytics solutions and fosters partnerships with companies and organizations on a global scale. In his role, Brandon leads a team responsible for the design, execution, and management of data-driven research and experiential learning projects, ensuring the application of cutting-edge analytics methodologies. His efforts contribute significantly to advancing the field of analytics and enhancing the practical application of data science in business context. Brandon received his BA in Communications and American Studies from Boston College and earned a Master's in Computer and Information Technology from the University of Pennsylvania. Please welcome Brandon.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me. That was quite an intro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you're an impressive guy.
There's a lot to go over. Thank you.
I like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
I was born in a little town, or I think it's a town. I haven't been back since I was born. Middletown, New York, upstate.
All right.
Kind of in the Catskills.
Okay.
Didn't live there long, but that's where I was born. My parents, my dad is a lifelong jazz musician.
Really?
Yep, professional jazz musician.
My dad has played jazz drums for 50 years. It's not what he does, but it's...
Oh, wow. Okay, great. He's been playing over 50 years professionally.
Wow.
You know, a little break in there with COVID, but aside from that, it's been steady.
What does he play?
Saxophone, tenor sax.
Nice.
Working musician. My mom is retired for a long time. She was an accountant, and then she worked as a vice president and then a president at a university. Very different paths. So I have a little of each of them and then some other stuff going on as well.
So when you were a kid, people would say, oh, what do you want to be? Some people say astronaut. Did you have what do you want to be when I grew up? Did you have a dream of what you wanted to be?
Yeah, it's funny. So as a kid, when I was really young, I loved flying on airplanes. I didn't travel that much, but every time we were on a plane, I loved it. And I wanted to be a steward. I wanted to work on an airplane. I didn't want to be a pilot. I wanted to be a steward. I thought that would be fun, just to serve drinks and food to people. I also wanted to be a chef at one point, even though I never got into cooking, but I did like the big hat. I wanted to be a baseball player at some point. I wasn't very good at baseball, but that seemed appealing. I also, related to baseball, wanted to be a hot dog stand vendor because I thought that was kind of a cool role at these baseball games. You got a guy that's kind of like off to the side. He's got a hot dog vending cart or hot dog cart, whatever you call it, and serving hot dogs. That seemed very fun to me with the steam and the buns and everything. And then I also worked at a fruit stand. I wanted to be a full-time fruit stand retailer. And then everything changed when I started playing music. I wanted to be a musician. I started playing sax for a short amount of time. Then I transitioned to bass when I got into rock and heavy metal. And I wanted to be a musician for a long time. I still do. I mean, I am a musician, but I wanted to be a professional musician.
I don't have that talent, but I appreciate it. And, you know, I've seen a lot of joy come out of my dad for playing jazz with.
Yeah.
He plays with all professionals for the most part. He plays with some, he has one group called Moonlighting where none of them are professionals and they all do, that's how they moonlight as musicians.
So where is that? Is that in Philly? The Philly?
Yeah, in Philadelphia. Okay. He's been playing with, you know, people. His big claim to fame, I guess, is he used to play with Grover Washington Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Who was my first Little League basketball coach. And
really?
My dad's a judge. So
okay.
One of the things I find cool is he would go into prisons and play with his band, with Grover.
Mm-hmm.
He actually played in a jam session with people that he had sentenced to prison.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so he's survived it. He's made it out alive. But you went and studied communication and American studies before pivoting to kind of computer and information. Can you
Yeah.
kind of walk us liberal arts to computer science, how that kind of unique background kind of informs teaching and research today?
Yeah, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, I loved music. I definitely knew that. I love music, but I did want to go to college. I went to BC. I didn't know what to study. Communications seemed like, I don't know, easier. I don't really know. I did eventually get into some other, I got into American history and some other things there, but I started out and graduated as a communications major. BC, I graduated. I did a number of different jobs, administrative jobs, nonprofits, grant writing. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I even had jobs. I had a paper out after college. I had,
After college.
yeah, it was something I always wanted to do. I didn't do as a kid. One of my first jobs actually was a paper route. I thought, oh, that would be cool to just work from like 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. every day and then have the rest of the day free. I didn't know it was 7 days a week, so that was a bit of a grind. I worked at a summer camp. I worked at a music camp. A lot of different jobs. And definitely continued to play music. I was playing in bands. I was gigging quite a bit in the Providence, Rhode Island area, the Boston area. Then I went back to school to get an associate's degree in radio broadcasting. I did have some internships at radio stations. I enjoyed that, but I wanted to do things on the production side, like the recording side. So I did get that associate's degree. I never did that at a radio station professionally, but what I did do in that program was I met someone who had a job for me when I graduated, and it was editing audio. There was voiceover talent. They were brought in to record different things. I wasn't even listening to the content, but they needed someone to edit the audio. And I fell in love with that process. I knew some of that from radio broadcasting school, but definitely was just like, wow, I love editing audio. This post-production thing is for me. And then I think I got laid off from that job. Ended up getting a job at a web conferencing company. This was back in the, I don't even know, it was probably the late 90s, early 2000s. Web conferencing was like a big thing at that point. And I got into programming. I started teaching myself programming to build like a customized web conferencing platform for Big Pharma. So that was my introduction to programming. I kind of taught myself at that point. I mean, I was completely
But
self-taught.
you had not real, you weren't coding as a little kid or programming
No.
as a young, you weren't like into that kind of techie tinkering.
No, I wasn't one of those guys who was like, oh, I've been playing with computers since I was 4 years old. I wasn't that person. I did a lot of different things. I didn't get into coding until I was in my, this is at this point, like my mid-20s, something like that, mid to late 20s. It was a requ I needed to do it, and I really fell in love with it. Specifically, Flash programming. Flash is not really around anymore, but that was at the time it was pretty hot. It's like a scripting language, basically. It's kind of like JavaScript. Really enjoyed that. Did a lot for work for a company, and it was in Norristown, Pennsylvania. Built this web conferencing platform, customized for Big Pharma. Then I decided to go back to school to kind of fill in my gaps. Because clearly I was like into programming. I felt like I could make a living doing that. So I went back to I enrolled in a master's program at Penn. It was called the Masters of Computer and Information Technology program, still around. It was in person at the time. Now it's in person and online. And that for me, that was the game changer. So I figured out, okay, here's everything I know, and here's a lot of other stuff I don't know. I knew what I knew for my job, but that was about it. So I went back. It filled in a lot of gaps for me. It was really focused on, I would say, it was sort of like a computer science degree, but a little less of the academic side. It was really focused on a lot of programming, just the functional programming and like what you could do with programming. At the time, there, it was really focused on Java programming. That program changed everything for me because not only did I have work experience, now I had kind of the degree to back it up. And that was around, I don't know, 2008, 2009, something like that.
And when did you start teaching? Because
Yeah.
you're a lecturer and also you're deep in data science now. So how did you
Yeah.
get
So
from
at that point, I was, I had my degree. I wanted to work at the university. I wanted to work at Penn. Just thought it would be a good place to work. I ended up getting my first, well, not my first, I would say my first post-graduation programming job at the Penn School of Design. I was a contractor there, worked for a couple of years. Then I transitioned to Wharton. I worked for Wharton Computing, just working with faculty and staff to build different technology solutions. I was way into it at this point. I did somewhere along the way started doing a lot of freelance work for money, but also to like learn about different technologies. So I started an LLC and I did a lot of work on the side at night, on the weekends. Did that for years actually. Leak LLC was the name of that. And then I did transition into data analytics about 2015. It was actually an organization that was down the hall from where I was working, so that was convenient. But that at the time was Wharton Customer Analytics Initiative. And the job was research director. And I honestly didn't know much about it. I didn't really know what research was. I knew what data was. I liked doing data stuff, whatever that looked like at the time. Applied for the job and got the job. So I was all of a sudden managing, faculty research projects for, at the time, again, it was the Wharton Customer Analytics Initiative, which is a previous incarnation of the Wharton AI and Analytics Initiative. And then around 2018, I was doing that for a few years. I was missing programming day to day. I was also teaching workshops for WCAI at the time, SQL workshops, Python workshops for students. Really enjoyed it. I thought, I wonder if I could teach like a course. I don't really know. I don't have a PhD. I didn't then, I don't now. So I don't know, I thought you had to have a PhD to be a faculty, but I guess not. So I applied for a lecturer position at Penn Engineering and got that. And they basically gave me my first class, like, I don't know, 6 months later, there was a class that was available to teach. It was a programming class. It was half Python and half Java. I knew Java. I didn't know Python, so I learned Python. And then I knew a little Python. I mean, it was fairly easy. And then I've actually been teaching that same class since 2018 on campus.
Well, as a fellow lecturer at Wharton, I also don't have a PhD.
Yeah.
Well, I have a doctorate degree because I went to law school, but I don't think it's
Oh, you
really.
did?
It's a law, yes. So,
Okay.
I've never been a lawyer, and in the next life is what my dad and I joke about.
Yeah.
Okay, but so now you're in this role where you're both teaching and you're director of research. Tell me about your approach to those two different areas that you are engaged in.
Yeah, I mean, there's overlap. There's definitely overlap, but they're different. So certainly like on the Wharton side, I'm the director of data science and research. So I'm managing all kinds of data related projects, data analytics projects. Now it's AI projects. I have a team, great team, data scientists, data engineers, project managers, and we support a number of centers and labs within Wharton, and everything data related. So a lot of what we do is we work with companies to actually solve business problems for companies. We have partnerships with companies. I work closely with companies to customize analytics projects and provide them to students for experiential learning. So that's teaching slash mentorship. Students work on these projects for a short, 8 week period in the fall, in the spring, a bunch of projects we do in the fall and the spring. We also provide these same types of projects to faculty and academic researchers at the university. Similar process, just longer term projects. So a big part of my job is really customizing these projects for students and faculty. They all involve data. So everything from scoping business questions with the companies to determining what the data is. We get the data from the company. We clean it if necessary. We document it. We provide that data to faculty and students. Another part of that job is building educational resources for students. Me and my team do that. So it's a lot of in-person workshops, building online modules and courses for anybody at the university, not for credit, Python, SQL, data visualization, big data, building custom GPTs, like all kinds of interesting educational resources, sports analytics. So that's that role. Then I have this teaching job on the side. I teach in person. I also teach online for Penn Engineering Online, which are separate courses that only run online. These are essentially through the MCIT program and the data science program, but in the online version. So I teach those courses as well. It's a lot of similar content, to be honest with you, but it is in various formats for different kinds of students. And it's a different hat. I mean, I'm getting more technical. I'm teaching concepts. I'm getting into coding. I code live in the classroom, so students can watch me code and make mistakes, which is great. That's how you learn. And obviously things are changing now with AI and programming, but at this point it's essentially the same. I'm teaching Python, I'm teaching Java, and I'm teaching data science in the data science program. So, I mean, where's the overlap? A lot of students in engineering engage in our programs at Wharton. A lot of Wharton students take my courses through their Wharton specializations, or other students on campus will take my courses. So there's a lot of overlap. So I get students to work on our projects, to work for us as TAs, and vice versa. So there's a lot of overlap, and it's actually a very nice relationship.
In terms of, and you might want to answer this for each piece, but what do you find most challenging about your roles?
Time management.
You're doing too
Yeah, that's really, no, but
much.
in a good way. I mean, it's really like I'm wearing different hats. There's nothing, oh, I would say switching gears sometimes. You know, there's a lot of switching gears. It's like, okay, I'm teaching now, and now I'm not teaching. I'm project managing, and or I'm managing, you know, people on a team, or I'm managing TAs. So, you know, switching gears and time management, but there aren't, I wouldn't say in particular challenges with the roles. There are interesting challenges that we're dealing with at Wharton, like problems for, you know, that we're trying to solve for companies and things like that. Those are good challenges. But I've figured out this career. I've figured out how to make this work, and it works for me, and I think it works for everyone else as well with the relationship between the two schools.
Well, that leads me to my kind of next question, which is, so what do you find most rewarding about the two hats that you wear?
So I would say teaching, I really enjoy working with students and helping students and teach them, but also like provide them, I feel like, with guidance and mentorship as they, you know, move through school and then hopefully onto to, you know, usually technical careers. So I provide, I work with the students that I teach, but also my teaching assistants, like to help them learn about how do you teach these topics? How is this actually done? Because some of them are interested in actually teaching, which is why they become TAs in the first place. So it's rewarding for me to expose a lot of students between in person and online to these concepts. Like these are things that have not changed in a long time and aren't going away. Python programming, Java program, but also like just in general, like what is programming? The concepts of programming that kind of transcend specific programming languages that can be applied across any number of programming languages, even with AI. You still have to know about these concepts and how to interpret code and what are you actually getting from your ChatGPT. And so these are things that are not going away. And then on the data science side that I'm teaching, same thing, exposing students to these concepts, a lot of which I've actually learned at the Wharton side. And then I developed a Coursera specialization on the engineering side, which is basically how do I do data analytics? What are the questions I ask? How do I deal with the data? How do I do predictive modeling? How do I visualize data? How do I tell a story? These are things I kind of all learned from Wharton, but then built out this course material for engineering, but other students as well, again, across campus. And then on the Wharton side, what's rewarding? I mean, you know, working on these projects with actual companies, with actual data sets, that's a huge part of it. It's rewarding to be working on such a great team and managing such great people who all bring their expertise to the team and the organization and the projects. So it's overall very rewarding. And again, it's just exposing students to these types of experiential learning projects is super rewarding.
Yeah, and experiential learning is something I've always found intriguing because I think it's if you live near a little ivory tower, then you go to the real world and you're like, oh, what's this real? And so I've always been a fan of like co-ops and experiential learning.
Yeah.
Can you share any of the recent initiatives of something that you kind of thought made a real impact that you worked on with these students?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, so like every semester, we work with companies on actual analytics projects. Oh, I'll talk about a specific example that you were involved with. So in the spring, yes, you. In the spring, we hosted our second annual hackathon, Hack AI-thon. This is for any student at the university who wanted to participate in a AI hackathon for a week-long competition. And the prompt this year was, build something for education using AI. Pretty open-ended, but you know, very relevant. Teams of students worked on this and built, as you know, developed amazing applications in just a week. This is the second time we did this. Last year was a lot smaller. This year we doubled size of the number of students, and the projects were so much more sophisticated this year. You were a judge. Thank you for
It
that.
was my honor and super impressive. Like, considering the time constraints they had, but it blew me away in what they were able to do.
So this was amazing to see. Like, okay, so first of all, giving students the opportunity to work on these this kind of open-ended prompt, like building interesting things for education. AI and education is a huge topic right now, right? Like, not only for teachers, but like students and like everybody. Like, where is this going? Like, how is AI integrated into all these different workflows and courses for different topics in different ways? So students came up with amazing things. They presented at the end of the week. We had, obviously judging, and we picked the winners, and the winning team presented at one of our board meetings, and also, to executives at different companies. So it was an amazing experience. So this was super impactful for us to see, to have this portfolio of projects, but also students. We want to kind of be known as like the portal for AI related, all related, AI education, especially at within Wharton and the university. So students can come to us and work on these types of hackathons. It's very impactful. And again, all these analytics projects we do with companies are now becoming analytics slash AI projects. So it's not only, using analytics techniques, but also kind of building AI tools for companies. Like, it's a lot getting a lot easier to build these types of tools, as you know, because the tools to build them are so good. That companies are coming to us now is not only solving analytics projects, but we want to use AI to solve problems. Can you help us? So we really try to help them. We try to ha have an impact on the companies as well, and help steer them towards the right approach to their problem, and deliver something that's useful for them that they can implement. And again, providing that to students is amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that students are getting to work on real things, which is super cool because a lot of times there's not that opportunity. And it's a win-win, I think, for companies and for students and the university as a whole. So
It's a win-win.
big fan of that. Now, you had said earlier that you've kind of worked, you figured out your career kind of thing. And so I always like to ask this question. So if you could go back to your 21-year-old self and give that 21-year-old Brandon a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, that's funny. I don't know. Just don't think about it too much. Just keep going, which is basically what I did, actually. Like, it's not even like I would do anything. Like, I organically found different things that I was interested in, and then found the right path. Some of it's luck. Some of it's luck. Some of it is, saying yes to everything. So that's a big thing that I that's like actually advice I would provide to like younger folks who are starting out in their careers or in school and about to embark on a career, is don't say no to things because you never really know. Assuming it's sort of relevant to your work, don't say no. Say yes, because it always opens a door that you're not seeing. Like applying for an analytics job down the hall from my programming job. That didn't really make a lot of sense, but I was like, well, the job's open. They can't fill it. Maybe I should apply. It's
Why
right
not?
there. It's
Don't
right
ask
down the
why
hall.
not. Why not? Yeah.
So for me, like, the advice would be don't say no, which I didn't. I said yes a lot. And then don't think about it too much, but definitely stay in your lane. Like, just think about what are you interested in, and kind of go for that. The one thing I didn't do was music. Like, I didn't do it professionally, but that's difficult
Still
to
young.
do, and that's just not the way it worked out for me. That's okay. I've done all these other amazing things. So
And you still play and get
yeah, I
joy
still
out of it.
play, and I've gigged quite a bit and traveled and all that stuff, and there are other outlets for that. But for me, I would just, others same. It's like, don't overthink it too much. Don't chase money. I did not chase money. I chased things I was interested in. Money will come later. And so that's definitely the advice I would give to myself and probably other 21-year-olds.
It's interesting. There's a concept I keep meaning to write about luck, because looks like, oh, you got to. And it's the concept of smart luck. So dumb luck is you're walking down the street, there's $5, you pick it up, you put it in your pocket. Smart luck is you want to be an actor? Take some acting classes. Like, so putting yourself in a position where you progressing towards whatever that goal is, and the little just incremental steps will get you much further than you think, but you have to kind of start and put yourself in that position for good things to happen.
You have to put yourself out there. That means different things for different people, but putting
Yes.
yourself in situations where there's opportunities.
100%.
Yeah.
Now, you are a lecturer at Penn Engineering and the director of research at Wharton AI Analytics. By most stretches, people would say brand is successful, but I would like to know how you define success.
I mean, there's work success, and then there's other kinds of success, right? There's health, there's family, there's things like that. I would say work success is, I mean, I'm successful in the sense that I'm working. That's success. You know, I actually have jobs, multiple jobs, getting paid, and then also working on things that I'm interested in. So I mean, like enjoying your work, like that's success. If you enjoy your work and you make enough money to live, then I think you're successful, honestly. And there's, you know, if you want to grow in your career, if there are opportunities, then that's success. If you don't want to grow in your career, then that's okay too. But if you're working, that's successful. Of course, there's success. So all these different hats, I have these different kind of requirements in my head that I need to satisfy, like teaching and analytics and management. All these different things are being satisfied by my different jobs. So for me, that's success. Of course, success, you know, outside of work, family, I have kids, relatively healthy. So all of these are obviously big part of success as well in life.
Yeah, you and I are similar in that I wear many hats, and so
Yeah.
it's you kind of, have the freedom to craft that kind of
Right.
professional career, and it's not just this one thing, it can be a few things, and
Yeah.
things interesting, and I think sometimes people are like, I have to be this. Well, you don't have to just be this, and also if you can't fulfill something directly professionally, you can find a way to do it as a side hustle or as a
Right.
hobby. And like, there's lots of ways to do things. I love poker. Am I going to be a professional poker player? No, I'm not that
Maybe,
good.
maybe.
But I play enough and I get enjoyment out of it when I'm playing
Right.
with my dad and the big bet is 50 cents. So, it's
Right.
not a lot of risk.
I would say for me, like I never really planned on like being the person that worked a lot of jobs and had a lot of different like interests. It just kind of worked out that way. I applied for a lot of jobs I didn't get. I wanted to work on a big team, you know, at Comcast and be a programmer on a. That never really happened for me in that way. I ended up doing cobbling together other things like freelance projects and like teaching, where you're kind of working alone, you know, with TAs, but you're basically like running the show. And then obviously the analytics side. So that's just the way it happened for me.
I quote John Lennon very often and say, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Yeah,
So
right.
it's
Yeah.
just one of the things. Speaking of inspiration, what inspires you?
Again, like, you know, there's work and there's life. I would say for work, what inspires me is again, like being able to continuously work on interesting projects with interesting people and also working with different kinds of stakeholders, companies, students, faculty, staff, all these different, you know, all my different colleagues that I work with at the university is really what inspires me. And being able to do it in different roles is like amazing. And also like the connections being made across the university between the different schools, mainly Wharton and engineering, that's super inspiring. That keeps me going. Family inspires me, you know, wife, kids. I have multiple kids, so that really inspires me and keeps me going. It's probably one of the biggest things. Music continues to inspire me. So I do a lot of this stuff, but also like I'll close my laptop and go, you know, knock on my bass for an hour or play drums or guitar. That, you know, the time away is important as well. Like to do these other things that inspires your work and just keeps, you know, it feeds your soul. So I would say all of those different things together inspire me.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things I've just noticed, a theme is kind of like you thrive on the variety.
Variety.
You don't want to just have one thing because that's boring. And for you, and I'm the same. Some people
Yeah.
love doing the same thing over and over. Like
Yeah.
for me, the having that variety, it's why I like working with different kinds of clients, big, small, this industry, that industry, because it makes it more interesting for me than
Right.
just working in this one field or this one kind of industry. But I think what it is whatever it is for you, whatever,
Yeah.
you have to figure it out. You have to be aware enough to recognize this is what makes me happy.
Yeah, you nailed it. Variety. What do they say? Variety is the spice of life, they said. Yeah. But for work, So it's definitely for me, like it's just, again, I just followed different things I was interested in and ended up doing them as part of some job. It's sort of a thing.
It's life. There's something that's not a job. Real education happens outside of school, and real education comes outside of your job. And so it's about putting the pieces. It's about connecting those dots. See, that's what it's
Whoa, and you just connected it back to great.
about. Now you're in the kind of analytics and AI space. A lot of people are trying to figure it out. It's kind of like overwhelming. So if I'm someone who's like, hey, I want to become a little more AI literate or data analytic literate, what advice or where would you direct me to start?
Honestly, I would just say just start trying stuff. Just start trying different tools. I mean, there's the obvious tools, right? ChatGPT. Just try using it for different kinds of use cases, or Claude or Gemini, whatever you want to use. They're similar, right? But ChatGPT is obviously like kind of the go-to. It's like the Swiss Army knife of AI tools at this point. Just try it for different things. And when I say different things, it can be whatever you want, right? There's the obvious things like writing and summarizing text, and I'm going to write emails with ChatGPT, extracting information from documents. Just try doing these things, doing research on any topic. You can use ChatGPT or other, similar tools. Brainstorming for ideas, trivia, humor, jokes, writing short stories for your kids before bedtime so you don't have to come up with another story every single night. I'm just using that as an example. Analyzing art and music. So I've recently been like, I'm not an art buff by any means. I actually know nothing about art, but we've been to a couple museums. I'll walk around the museum, take pictures, put it into ChatGPT and be like, tell me about this. And I'll do it with photos around my house, old photos. Tell me about this. Analyze things in a fun way using ChatGPT or other tools.
I
Uh,
was
create you create images. Learn how to, iterate on your prompts to create images or do other, even create music. Other things, generating or writing code, right? These are things that a lot of people are, a lot of programmers are using ChatGPT for, or other tools. Take it to the next level. Build websites or try to build a website or an application using AI. Just try it. They call this vibe coding now, right? Like it's very fun, right? It's more fun than you even realize. If you're a programmer, it's even more fun because you know kind of what it's doing. Specific tools for that. Lovable, Windsurf. There's very specific tools that make this a lot of fun. Try analyzing data with AI, especially if you're at a company. This is something that's kind of almost a game changer. Give it some data files. Tell it exactly what you want. How many rows are in this data file? How many customers do I have? Segment my customers in different ways. How many purchases do I have? All these different things. Just try it. And you'll find it's actually a lot of fun. So I would say these are the really great ways to get started. Ask questions about your data, high level questions. And then again, like kind of the last thing is learning about any topic at all, like with ChatGPT even, like ask it to teach you something and create examples and exercises for you to work on, like coding or math or history or any of these things. Just try any of these things. And I think you're going to find, then you're going to try to find your own use cases.
Yeah, I often say to people, go experiment, go play,
Experiment. As
just
an individual or at a company.
right.
Right, you're in leadership. Start experimenting with things. Start with the obvious tools, right? ChatGPT is easy, right? Gemini, Claude. Like, just start with those. If they don't do something like you're really trying something specific, then you're probably going to have to upgrade to something else and invest in something else. The other thing too is like just in general, like keeping on top of AI technology and different tools is follow your kind of platform of choice, like LinkedIn or Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. Like pick one and then try to keep on top of like what's happening in the world of AI. I like LinkedIn. That's worked for me. What's hot in terms of tools and platforms if you're looking at the technology itself?
Yeah, they have
AI
tons
agents are
of
hot
good,
right now,
right?
right? So who's working in AI agents? How do I build an AI agent? What are the platforms? Follow your, I don't know what platform you, I know you're on LinkedIn, but like just pick one of these and keep on top of it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And there's a million podcasts. Go and find a podcast, listen to, I know someone who has a podcast about technology. Who was? Oh,
Me
wait.
too.
Yeah. So It's time for kind of rapid fire. So
Yeah.
sometimes this goes rapid, more rapid than others, but we'll see how it goes. So if a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
So people used to say when I was young and he was young, I looked like Joe Rogan. Clearly, we don't look alike anymore.
You look like an old Joe Rogan, which is a good
Yeah,
thing.
I look like an older Joe Rogan. I also look like a weaker Joe Rogan. But when we were young, I there was some kind of resemblance there. I don't know when he was on Fear Factor. People,
Yeah.
like multiple people said, you look like Joe Rogan. So I don't know, maybe Joe Rogan could play me.
Can you name one of your favorite movies?
Back to the Future, first one.
It's a classic.
It never gets old.
No.
It's
I
so
always get on
good.
TV and I'll just keep watching it. Like,
Yeah. Another movie I love, although I haven't seen it in a long time, was, do you remember the movie Biloxi Blues?
Sure, with Matthew Broderick.
I love that movie.
Really good.
Neil Simon? Was it Neil Simon the director? Yeah, such a great movie.
Great source material. Can
Yeah.
you, speaking of which, can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
So I'm not going to talk about a book, but I'm going to tell you that when I was a kid, and this is what actually got me into music, was Rolling Stone and music magazines. Like to the point where I would see pictures of famous musicians playing, and that inspired me to actually pick up the bass. I saw a picture of someone specific in a band, a metal band. And I was like, wow, that is amazing. And I remember that moment. I was like, I want to play that instrument. It looks amazing. And I've been playing ever since. So, like, definitely magazines for me as a kid were maybe bigger than books, actually. But that came to mind.
I like that. Here's a toughie. Do you have a favorite AI tool?
ChatGPT. And now Claude.
Oh.
Claude is for coding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite emoji? Thumbs up, baby. All right. How about a favorite non-digital activity?
Music.
Pretty simple there.
There it is.
What's the one thing you can't live without?
My bass and my kids and my wife.
Fair enough.
I have to mention them.
I get it. I'm the same.
Yeah.
And finally, if you could be credited with inventing something, either that exists or could exist, what would it be and why?
Oh, I don't know if you'd call this inventing, but writing impactful songs. Like that's something that like most people can't do, right? I mean, anybody can write a song, but writing a song that has a lasting impression on the world, like if you think about the music of the Beatles, like everybody knows these songs and you will never get them out of your head ever. I want to know what is that. I want to learn more about that formula. How do you tap into that formula like Paul McCartney does to like write a song? It works. It works for like a lot of people. I mean, I've done it here and there. I want to do that. More of it.
Leave that legacy.
Yeah.
Speaking of legacy, so thank you. You've been amazing. I really appreciate your time and thoughtfulness. Is there anything you're promoting at the moment you want to share? Maybe some podcast you do or anything like that?
Yeah, so I have a podcast. It's Learn the Technology with Brandon Krakowski. It's on YouTube, it's on Spotify. I do interviews kind of like this. But I talk to people at companies and different organizations and some universities about technology broadly. We talk about AI, but we talk about all kinds of things. I learn about where they're from, how they got their job, similar questions that you asked. What's the technology they use in their role, or what's the technology they're building? I do
I've
this.
listened to a couple and it's a great podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely, I do this every week. And then as a follow-up to the interviews, I typically do some kind of demo. Like I'll demo a product, a platform, a tool, a programming language, a technique that they've talked about. I try to link it to the interview. So it's two parts. There's interviews and there's demos, depending on what you like or you like both. Again, YouTube, Spotify, maybe we can put the link in
I'll put it in the show
the
notes. Don't
when
you
we post
worry.
it. Yeah. Oh, and I
And
promote the Wharton AI and Analytics Initiative through Wharton, all kinds of experiential learning projects for students, and academic research projects for faculty.
if someone wants to connect with you online, social, what's the best way to connect with you?
LinkedIn.
Yes. All
Again,
right.
yeah, we'll put that in the post. But yeah, LinkedIn's gonna be the way to do it.
Brandon, I super appreciate your time. It's great to chat with you. It's great to learn about your history and all the interesting things about you. And most of all, I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQNewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.